All right, we're going to be in John 9 this morning. And really going to begin the last section of this study that we've been doing on the Jesus touch. And in this part of our study, we're talking about being beware of pigeonholes. Okay, that is labels and libels. Right, and so what we want to do as we begin looking at this, just kind of by way of introducing the idea of what's going on in this particular passage, y'all come on in. Come on in. We're just getting started. And I'm not trying to put y'all on the spot, but I actually am. What's your name? Have y'all here? Alright, so we're talking about labels, and we begin with the this statement: labels go on things, not on people. Okay? Labels go on things, not on people. You see, labels, if you think about it, are really good for things, aren't they? What kinds of things do we typically find labels on?
Prices.
What?
Prices,
okay, on stuff, right? Okay? What other things do we find labels on? Or what are the kinds of labels?
Identity.
Clothes?
Identity.
Identification labels for... What's in there? Okay, all right. So you have on clothing, you might have a label for the size, small, medium, large, extra large, or whatever the case may be. Labels that identify what's inside of a product or ingredients or whatever. Food and Drug Administration is, you know, over the last bunch of years has gotten real tough on that kind of stuff. You have to put what's in there. And even the calorie count. So that's part of the labels that sometimes we don't like, aren't they? You know, if I read how many calories is on that thing, the manufacturers don't like that either, by the way. Because not only does it cost them more money to put all that stuff on the labels, but when people read the labels of how many calories and how much fat and so forth in there, they don't buy it as often, you see. But labels, you know, we do those, you know, food labels, product safety labels. And some of the product safety labels that are out there are really kind of silly and ridiculous. But because of, you know, the potential lawsuits and all of those kinds of things, they have to put all kinds of strange labels on products in order to warn people about things. And of course, there's always that one famous label you probably have all seen at one time or another. If you've ever bought a mattress or a pillow, there's a label on there that the federal government says has to be on there, and it is a federal offense if you remove that label. Okay. Why does the federal government care whether or not I have a label on my pillow that tells me, you know, not to use to suffocate people or whatever, you know, whatever, you know, these labels. But labels, you know, are some of them are good, some of them are just ridiculous. But we put labels on all kinds of things, don't we? But labels are not good for people. Okay? Labels are not as good for people. But yet we label people a lot of different ways and for a lot of different reasons. Think about it. We label people, for instance, we label someone when we don't really know their name. Okay? And so oftentimes, and maybe, you know, you and your family or people you associate with, you know of a particular person, like, you know, that guy down at the gas station. See, and that's the label that we put on that person, how we use to identify that person. Or, you know, the lady, you know, that always wears the pink dress, you know, at the store. certain labels that we use to identify folks. And what happens, though, is that that label not only becomes how we identify that person, but it often becomes, at least to us, their identity. In other words, when we see that person, what we see is the label. Okay? It's very difficult then, because all we see is the label. We don't really see a person behind that label. We label other people sometimes because we don't really know them as a person. Okay? They're just a label. All right? They're just a label. Some feedback. Think about labels that you have for other people in your life. Can you think of any?
Lisa? I don't have any particular labels for other people, but this really bothers me, and I think this is a Southern thing. I am originally from here, but I spent 25 years in upstate New York on the Canadian border, and I've only been back for 4.5 years now. And I'm not used to it, but it seems like every single person you encounter and speak to, there's always an adjective in front of the noun when referring to people. It's that white man, that black man, that white girl, that black. And I'm just not
used to
that.
Yankee?
And it's like, it bothers me.
Okay.
Well,
oftentimes you're right. That's how we start out a label that way. It's that, you know, that man that does this or wears that or is always this or that or what have you. Isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, you have to give a description like a police officer looking for them.
Okay.
And that's all that you know. I don't know what the label is.
No, not really.
Crazy Uncle James. It's crazy.
Okay. All right. Okay. There's a professor in a college that gave a test to his students on one occasion, and I understand that this has been done several times. This one particular professor gave a test to his students, and there was one question on the test. And the test said, "What is the name of the school custodian?" How many people passed the test? Right, nobody. Nobody knew. They see this person every day in the halls, in the bathrooms, and wherever, cleaning, doing their job, but nobody knew the person's name. They just knew him as the janitor or the custodian. Later. And that's, you know, we do that a lot of times with folks. Again, maybe we don't want to know this person. We don't care to know this person for whatever reason. I think in situations like that, oftentimes it's, whether it's just a janitor, you know, and so what I need to know their name for, what do I care what their name is? As long as the bathrooms are clean, the halls are clean, or whatever. Okay? And so we kind of, in a sense, categorize that person under that label. Let me ask you this question. How many of you, if you go to a restaurant, of course, now I know today it's the kind of the big thing with restaurants, you know, that when their server comes, waiter or waitress comes to the table, now they usually tell you their name. Okay? But how many of you, if they don't tell you their name, how many of you ask the waiter or waitress what their name is when they begin to serve? Anybody? Okay. All right. You know that you will typically get better service if you ask the person their name and you refer to them by name while you're interacting with them. Okay. But typically what we do is we pin a label on them. They're the waitress or the waiter, or as I sometimes jokingly refer to as, and I say, the nurse. And he's like, nurse, what do you call them, nurse? Well, because they take care of you. That's what nurses do, right? But you know, I like that. I like to ask people's names. I like to find out who people are. I like to converse with people, and I like to find out who I'm talking to. Okay? And you might be surprised, even, you know, in situations like that, at a restaurant where you've got a waiter or a waitress, they don't tell you what the name is. You ask them what the name is, and then refer to them by that name at different times. If you need something, whether it's, say, you know, hey, Jimmy or Susie or whatever, could you get me, you know, a knife, you know, or whatever, or, you know, this plate has got a little bit of dirt on it, or, you know, whatever it is that you need, refer to them by name, okay? And that changes the dynamic of their service oftentimes. Okay?
It opens many of the opportunities for you to converse with.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
You see? Because people typically don't like labels. They don't like to be labeled. Okay? We label oftentimes people we don't want to deal with. And so we have certain labels like liberal or conservative to identify folks in one group or another that, you know, we, you know, well, they're a bunch of liberals, you know, or they're a bunch of conservatives, we don't want to deal with them. So we label them. See? Or how about saints and sinners? How often do we label people that way? If you go to church, you're a saint. If you don't go to church, you're a sinner. And, of course, being good church people the way that we are, which is a label, okay, we prefer to hang around with the saints rather than the sinners, right? But we label people that way. Folks who don't agree with homosexuality, label those who are homosexuals as that. Well, they're homosexuals. And those who are in the homosexual community, label those who disagree with their lifestyle as homophobes. So we have labels. And here's the biggest problem with that. When we put labels, whether we agree with someone or don't agree with him on something, what happens is we don't ever really get a chance to get to know the person that we're dealing with. All we're really dealing with is a label. Okay? And so, you know, again, yes, it's, you know, that black man or that black woman or that white man or that white woman or, you know, whatever the case may be. If it's a racial thing, we label people that way. We don't want to deal with them. See? And we don't ever look beyond the label to find out anything about the person. Again, labels are really good for things, but they're not good for people. Okay? Now, having said all of that, let's talk about the man blind from birth. John chapter 9. Okay? And therein, in the title of this, is a what? A label, thank you. See? He has been labeled. Okay? Now, as we begin looking at this story, what we're going to be seeing in here is that this encounter that Jesus has with this man really kind of triggers a whole range of reactions from different people, the different characters, if you will, in this story, as we kind of used that analogy in the past, looking at the different events. We begin to notice the different characters in this story as it unfolds, and all of these different people involved in this have, in a sense, a different reaction or a different label, so to speak, that they use concerning this man, right? And so there's the disciples, okay, and their particular label or view of him. There's the man's family and his friends that have a particular reaction to him and what he what happens to him and so forth. Then there are the Pharisees, okay, and their reaction to him. There is the man himself. Okay, and how he reacts to the whole thing. And then, of course, there is Jesus. Now, here's one of the interesting things about this story. This encounter, as it triggers all these different reactions to this man and what's happened to him and so forth, this event caused such an uproar that it even got him kicked out of his own church. Okay, you think about that. He got kicked out of his own church because of the labels that people had put on him. And in this story, what we'll see is that the real blindness was in the people who couldn't see the man, but only his blindness, which was a label. Okay? So as we begin looking at this story a little bit here, we're gonna look at five different views of this man. Okay? Five different perspectives. We're in John chapter 9. Okay? Five different views of this man from five different perspectives. The first one is the disciples, who saw this man as really a topic for religious discussion. Okay? He was a man that was born blind, and to them, that label, so he gave them cause to open up a religious discussion with Jesus. Verse 2, it says, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" So you see, therein is the topic of the discussion. In other words, they didn't really see a person, see, as much as they saw an opportunity to discuss a religious issue or topic with Jesus. Right? This man was born blind. Obviously, somebody sinned. Okay? You see, the folks back then kind of had this belief that whatever hardships or difficulties, whatever tragedies you faced in your life, were the result of sin, period. And so they could be the result of your own personal sin, or they were the result of someone else's sin. But sin was involved in that thing somehow. So therefore, their understanding of this man was born blind, so therefore somebody had to sin. The issue is, was it his parents? Did they sin? And so their punishment was that they were going to have to raise a child who's blind. Or did he sin? Somehow, yeah, before he was born, did he sin? See? But the question is, who sinned? So here's an opportunity to take this situation and open up a religious discussion on the theology of sin and punishment. See? Jesus, we've heard these things, we've always been a little bit confused about some of these circumstances and situations. When people are facing difficulty or hardships or whatever in their lives, we really need to get to the bottom of this and find out from you, since you're the one. Certainly, you can clear up any confusion that we might have on this issue about sin and punishment. So here's a great opportunity to do that. Here's a man who's been born was born blind, and so tell us, Jesus, who's responsible for that? Okay. Now, here's an interesting thing. I don't know if you've ever thought about it this way, if you've read this story, and how many times you've ever read through this story. Where do you think this man might have been? I'm talking physical location at the time this discussion was going on with Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, he might have been just sitting right there. You know? And so they walk up, and there he is sitting there. And what's he probably doing? What is he doing, according to the story? What is he doing? What's he known for doing?
Begging.
Okay? So there he is, sitting there begging. It's all he can do, really, to take care of himself. Maybe make a little bit of money to help support the family that's taking care of him. But he's sitting there begging, and they walk up, and, you know, okay, Jesus, here, we got a question for you. Who sinned, this man or his parents? And he's sitting there, and like Brian says, he's not deaf, he's just blind. But what do we so often do? We talk about people as if they're not really there. We don't really see the person. When we put a label on him, this blind man, you see, then somehow he's not a real person. He's just a blind beggar. And so we can talk about him right there, and, you know, that's perfectly fine. Not really even stopping to consider his own feelings. And you know, I think the reality is that oftentimes we use people as a topic of our own religious discussions. Okay. Think about it. We might, for instance, talk about this church group or this denomination. Or it may be this particular person's sinful behavior that becomes the topic of our conversation. And so when we do that, what are we doing? Put a label on them, right? That person becomes, or that group of people becomes to us that label. And the result of that is that in a lot of ways we don't have to really deal with the real person. We just have to deal with the issue that that person presents to us. And so really convenient, especially if it centers around some moral issue or, you know, religious issue for discussion, we can feel really justified and good about that, can't we? See? And all the time, all we're doing, we're just focusing on the issue itself. And we don't have to deal with the person involved. We can talk about this person doing that or that person doing this. Never really have to deal with that person. Okay? And we feel good about those religious discussions all the while we ignore the person. So in a lot of ways, are we really that much different than the disciples in this particular story? We find issues, we place labels, and we get into religious discussions, and never really look at the person behind those things. Any thoughts or comments on that at all? Okay, let's talk about then the next group of people, and that's his neighbors. Okay, the man's neighbors really saw him as the beggar. Okay, that's how they identified him. They they really weren't even sure that it was him. Okay? If you look in verse 8, then what does it tell us there? Isn't he the beggar, the man that used to beg all the time? You see, they're seeing this man, they think this is the same guy that they've always seen out there begging. He's been blind all his life. Oh, yeah, he's the one that's been the beggar. But if you look in verse 9, yeah, some of them are saying, no, it's not really him. It only looks like him. Well, what does that tell you? Yeah. Yeah, they haven't seen the person at all. Enough to even be able to recognize him. They just saw a beggar. Okay. He was just a beggar. They were his neighbors, but they didn't even know him. They didn't even know him. They slapped a label on him to identify him. Okay. You can just imagine, is there neighbors and things going on in their lives on a daily basis, and they're talking about other things, let me tell you, I saw the beggar down there this morning. Guess what he did? The label to identify a person. One of the things that is really eerily absent from this whole story is a amount of joy at what's happened with this man when Jesus heals him. Okay? Think about it this way, and I think this is the result of labeling, and we'll see this more as we go through here. But here, this man was born blind. We don't know how old he is. But he's born blind, been blind all his life. He's old enough to sit out and beg, because that's how people knew him, as a beggar. So he's not a small child. He's a man. The Bible refers to him as a man. Okay, so he's been around a while. All this time he's been blind. Now he can see. And who cares? Okay. Who's joyful at the fact that this man has been healed of this blindness and he's been in darkness all of his life and now he can see? Who cares? Other than for, you know, the discussion topics. But there's just this eerie absence of joy on his behalf in this whole story.
Yeah.
And that's part of the point. People didn't know him. He was just a you see, one of the things that we have to understand that helps us understand the story better is to understand the times, and then we're going to ask ourselves, okay, have things really changed that much? But you see, people back then, if they were lame or they were blind or what have you, what could they really not do?
Support themselves.
They can't support themselves. What else can they not do? Not only can they not support themselves, but they can't really contribute to society. In fact, it's not that they can't contribute, but they are a drain on society because other people have to take care of them because they can't take care of themselves. And so folks back then, you see, that's kind of how they looked at people that were in that kind of condition. Whether they're lame, blind, they can't take care of themselves, other people have to take care of them. So in that regard, they are viewed by society as less worthless. Thank you. When you're dealing with someone who is worthless, like the janitor of your school, Why do you want to get to know that person? What's the point? When we fail to see the value of a person simply as a person, we put the labels on them. And there's no real need to even try to have a relationship with that person. Get to know them, okay?
A whole bunch of folks that were homeless to write on a sign something about themselves that nobody knew. And I don't remember what all of them were, but it was pretty profound.
Okay. Which in a sense is kind of helping, trying to help people to see them as a person rather than just a label of a homeless. And that's a great example. When we typically today, I mean, we're not a whole lot better than they were back then. Or we see homeless people, what do we typically do?
We fail to realize that every being has a story to tell. They have their own story to tell.
And not only that, but every being is a
child of God.
Child of God, a creation by God. Or a soul. Not a label. But this man's neighbors just saw him as a beggar. Right? And that label was so intense and solidified in their minds that when a change came upon him, many of them didn't even, you know, they didn't recognize it. See? Because they had never taken the time to get to know him before as anything other than a beggar. So how often do we label someone in our own lives, which makes them fairly easy to ignore? Let me ask you this. There used to be a man who wandered around the neighborhood here, collecting cans. Okay. He was referred to by most people around here as the can man. What is that? A label. Anybody here know what his name was? What? Carter. Carter was his name. Some interesting conversations with Carter at times. You know that Carter actually came and worshiped with us a couple of times? You know, we all remember him ever being here? When he was murdered, and he was, which was about a year ago, I don't think it was any longer than a year ago, he was murdered like he really made it. Again, people trying to figure out who he was, how did they identify him? But very few people really got to know him. Kenny knew him pretty well. Me and Kenny would argue and fight all the time. You know. Do what? Yeah. You know, but he, you know, he wandered around and he's always carrying his bag, you know, of cans and going all around and collecting cans and stuff. And that was a big part of how he lived. He did. He'd come in here a lot of times and say, "You got to do something about so and so and so and so." Okay. One time I made the mistake of asking him, "Carter, how are you doing?" You know, we ask that question a lot of times to people and we really don't want to know, do we? It's just a way of saying hi. Right? And I asked Carter one time, "How are you doing?" And I got more information than I really wanted to have. Okay? the Carter would talk to you if you would take a moment and show a little bit of interest. But his real name was Carter, not the camera. But yet here's a whole community around here where most of the folks, that's how they knew it, the camera. Okay. So how many of us as neighbors, say, really got to know him? Any other thoughts on that? Comments? And how often do we find ourselves in those kinds of situations with people in our lives that we encounter, some of them on a daily basis? And we don't ever get to know them past the sign on their door, if it's at work perhaps, or whatever situation that they are in.
Unless we say things that find them within the church. I mean, we're all lucky here. We know each other and we love one another. But I've been to congregations that have just, I mean, they knew a few that maybe were sitting around them, but they didn't really know the people that were like two rows down or whatever. And it's the same thing.
Yeah. And oftentimes that's a problem when you get into big mega churches and so forth, is that people only know a handful of people around, and you know, if you ever go visit some of these big churches and everything, you walk in, they don't know whether you're a member or whether you're a visitor, you know, because they, you know, they just don't know very many people.
They, what they do a lot of times, and I've been in a couple of those, attended a couple of those. I was in Northern Arkansas, and they had like 900 people in worship stage there, and they all had these little stickers on them. They came in, they would either put on the sticker their name and that they're a member, or that they're a gift of a member.
Right. We used to, the church that I was at, which I think was a pretty cool idea years and years ago, we had visitors' cards all printed up for our visitors, and on the visitors' card we attached a little crocheted rose that had sticky stuff on the back of it. And so for all of our visitors, they come in, they come on their visitor card, they get a rose to stick on their lapel or whatever, and that identified them to everybody as a visitor in case, you know, somebody didn't, you know, somebody had new members who didn't know everybody yet, and so they didn't know whether this person was a visitor or not. But it has also served as a great way to move that person from just being a visitor, you see, but they were kind of special. We could make something kind of special out of it. Person, you know, just to recognize them in a sense. Okay? So a lot of things like that sometimes we can do that makes it a little bit better than just sticking the label out.
When we stopped over recently, we stopped the church kind of late by Sunday. And we were, everybody, when they saw a face they didn't know, we just had trouble getting out of it. They kept coming up to us, you know. And Grace said, she said, I have to attend the church, I think I've ever been, and she said, y'all.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of the way it is here. I get people all the time saying, the friendliest group of folks I've ever seen. We don't let people get away from here without finding out something about them, you know.
Yeah, I got a thing in the mail, I guess, yesterday. Yep. From them, you know. But they knew that they could come up to you, they hadn't seen the faces, they knew.
And I've, on the other side of the coin, I've been, you know, the churches where I visited where not a single person has said a word to me. I ain't visible. Can you see me? You know, that would be Gene. You had a comment?
Yeah, I have to.
You're the talker. Maybe. Somebody's hand is Baron.
Yeah, I was in the division, and I was supposed to be a Northwestern military police officer. So we had different uniforms than everybody else. We had camouflage. So when we go and see the performance, there's only 6,000 people on the ship, and sometimes we're out in the water, we came down any day at a time. And sometimes in my Navy career, I would run across people that were on the ship for 3 years. And I had no idea what they knew me. So that's why I kind of always, you know, seem like a straight up guy, because you know, you never know when you run across me, you never run across me.
Okay. So, but let me get this straight. You guys had special uniforms. You wore camouflage, but yet everybody knew you. I'm just saying, okay? I know, I'm just teasing with you. Okay, all right. We're going to continue with this, not next week. Next week, Cindy and I will be out of town. Ray is going to be teaching class next week. We have a grandson and a birthday that we have to do some grandparent spoiling for. And so we'll be down in South Carolina next week. But when we come back, we're going to look at the Pharisees and how they saw this man. We're going to look at Jesus and how he saw him. Okay? We're going to look at him, how he saw himself. So that's where we're going to go. John chapter 9. Read over it a little bit more, and we'll pick up here next time.